This is CliffCentral.com.
Hi there, Adrian Groenewald, Alison Yandu, Louis Groenewald, and today we will talk about civic society, its transformation, and this is the Transformation Platform. Last week, Murray Chabant from, he spoke about ownership structures for BBBE, so that was a fascinating conversation. You can always download that podcast. So, yeah, next up, Wayne Duvenage, we know him from OTA. E-tolls, those kind of things, and it's good to have him with us on the line, unfortunately, but it's great to have him. Wayne, welcome.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Wayne, yeah, it's good to have you with us. We want to talk bigger picture first. There's some echo here. Let me take that away. Talk bigger picture. You're out there fighting the fight. You used to be an executive in a business. Do you look back at that some days and say, oh, that was easier? What life is more challenging now, the civic society movement or the corporate environment?
You know, it depends how you look at it. I really enjoy what we're doing here. There's no manual written for this social entrepreneurship, come civil action movement, and so it's great. It is less encumbered from this day-to-day mundane drone of running from meeting to meeting, but at the same time, it does require the corporate governance. It requires the discipline to ensure that, you know, people are motivated, they are focused on the vision and the project at hand, and that, you know, you're watching the numbers and the finances. But this is great. You know, it's not business as usual. This is very, very different. This is a non-profit organization. You're using people's money effectively to do what they want you to do, and that is to go and challenge the squander and the waste. So I certainly don't miss the corporate life, although I am an entrepreneur at heart, and I enjoy the corporate life. It's not like I don't enjoy it, but this is fun.
Yeah, and I think you've brought it all together. Some people go into civic society with a pure purpose driving them, but then they don't have the ability to put the practical structures in place and the good strategy to make it work and hold people accountable, and leadership ultimately needs to come on top of the passion that others around you have. It still needs to be managed and harnessed and so on. Now, just overall, your feeling, and maybe you're not a civic society expert, but I just want your feeling on the last 20 years or so, civic movement in South Africa. What was it like 20, 30 years ago versus now? Is it better? Is it worse? It seems more active. Your take on it?
I think it appears more active because the tree has been shaken. Civil society in the days gone past, you look at the Adasas of the world that aren't around anymore, and they had massive budgets. It was an academic process back then. It was, we were on a high in our new South Africa with new energy, with the Madiba magic, and there wasn't really much to condemn other than let's get on with building the new South Africa. Now, two decades later, and in fact a decade into it, one could see that problems were starting to develop. And this is where the real work of civil activism comes out. It's holding this new government to account. And the difficulty with that is that the government of the day, it's elected, and they're in place properly. You know, they've been ensconced through the right mechanisms. Yet the behaviour and the misconduct and the corruption, the maladministration that starts to creep in, needs to be addressed. And it's almost this, you know, but don't criticise. This is part of redistribution, and these are some of the teething problems. But that said, you know, you can't turn a blind eye. We need to put our foot down. And so 20 years in now, you see the real activism coming along. So you see Section 27, Mark Hayward and his team, Corruption Watch, ARTA developing. And these are organizations that are serious about tackling the issues. And they don't take no for an answer. And they work hard. But it's a tough space because government doesn't like its critics. And they have big, you know, war chests, litigation. This lawfare through litigation is really what they start to do.
And I guess what you have at your disposal now as a civic society, or all of us, is social media, for example. That surely has changed the face of civic society and its strength and power.
Massive, yes. And that's the other big development, is that suddenly, where we struggled 10 years ago to communicate, to own the narrative, to get the message across to the people, we could only rely on print and televised media. Well, social media has changed the game completely, and it's caught government off guard. They don't know how to manage it. So when we get the public to participate in lawmaking, such as, you know, comments on Gazette, where in the past they used to have to deal with 100, maybe 200 submissions. Well, our last one in December, we gave them 17,000 submissions.
Mm.
And the law is very clear. They've got to consider it all. And how do they do that? So they're grappling with it. And we don't do it to swamp them or to inundate them unnecessarily. We provide them with the information because that's the way it has to be and should be. And if they don't want to engage properly, well, then they do get this tsunami of backlash, of frustration from the public, and they're struggling with it. So they tend to ignore it, they tend to look the other way and forge ahead. Well, it gets tougher and tougher for them because, you know, they cannot tell the story without having ATA and the civil society people telling the story as well. And very often, the story and the narrative of the issues that come to the fore are owned now by civil activists, and not by government.
So it's for me, it's very interesting because for society to function effectively, you need government, you need business, you need labor, and you need civic society. And for me, literally, there's now an emergence of ordinary citizens through social media. You literally see, you saw it maybe at Marikana, where they went around the labor organization, started their own movements to fight what they wanted to stand up for. You see, even so there's almost this fifth leg standing up, and that's the general society who say, now, hold on, we're not waiting for the next elections before we hold government accountable or before we ask them for fees must fall or for free education. Mm. We're going to ask them right now. And we're going to march to union buildings, and social media makes it possible for us to speak up. Shows like this, it does not necessarily fall even under civic society, but maybe it is the broader periphery of civic society. I don't know. But I do see that almost as a fifth leg.
Yes, I think you're absolutely right. You're hitting the nail on the head there, but it's an uncontrolled leg.
It can be, correct. Yeah,
it can become quite chaotic and quite quickly. I think what we do find is those the public out there, when they are engaged with the civil action movement who has their interest at heart, like an ATA, they like to use the channel that we have in order to tackle the issues. But if we can't, because we are inundated with the number of issues and lack of capacity, you know, we've only got so many people and we can only tackle so many issues, yes, then it starts to spill out into that uncontrolled space. And I must say the Fees Must Fall campaign was an extremely good example and a highly efficient example of within 1 week bringing the president to his knees, literally agreeing to their demands so that he could let this wave subside. But what is the next one and what is the next one? And they're going to have to be very careful. So government is having to grapple with this new energy, the people's energy through through social media. And that's why you see this fear of social media from governments like South Africa, like the Eastern Bloc countries where they've now ruled and decided in Zimbabwe just last week saying we're going to shut the internet down if we see it becoming a bit of a threat to our stability. Well, the stability threat is really the government of the day who has lost the plot. And that's what's happening here in many respects, and the people are getting angry.
So before we get to ATA a little bit more and ETOLs and then what more you're doing, I guess would one of the success the ingredients to a successful civic society not be the attitude of government, whether they listen or not? So if they don't listen and they just shrug it off, then civic society is not as effective? Or does civic society actually thrive in an environment where government does not necessarily listen?
It does thrive. It would only thrive when it would only become a problem when government hijacks the court process. And that's where I think we are still very fortunate. We have a strong court process. Now, yes, where the government listens to the courts and abides by the court rulings is another thing. But then you have other factors such as the ratings agencies who start to say to government, okay, that's fine, we do not want to listen to the constitutional courts and the rulings that are coming out of that, well, then you just are downgraded and become a junk statist country. That then turns to the anarchy or the flight of capital and flight of talent. And I guess that's the beginning of the end. And then you've got to rebuild again. So right now we're in a precarious position where civil society is very, very important because, for instance, last week and this week we're waiting for SAA's response, the board's response. But if they do not adhere to our request, we're going to court. We're going to interdict their decision. And that's not an easy thing to do. We know that. But certainly something we can't ignore. And if ATA and other organizations are given the ability to do this more and more often, well, then we will see a change of heart by the leadership of these state-owned entities if they know that they're in our sights, if they know that that we will take them to task and hold them accountable. And we've got some brilliant laws. We can hold them personally to account, and they'll have to pay personally for the damage they're doing.
Okay, we'll ask you now in a moment about SAA. Just so OTI's organization undoing tax abuse. What is your main emphasis? Just here's an opportunity to communicate to a couple more people what it is and who you are. It's more than ETELS. We'll talk about ETELS in a moment, yes. But just what is your emphasis? You've grown somewhat. I mean, it's not just Wayne Duvenage running around and being heard in media anymore. Where are you now?
Yeah. So, you know, for many years, for the first 3 years, you know, these journeys are not short. They're long. You have to stick with them and run the course. Government loves nothing more than its critics and these civil action movements to die and disappear, and that almost happened with ATA. And we changed our model last year. We decided to go on a membership-based model, offering greater value and benefits to people who join us and contribute to us. So we offered the defense on the ETOLs, if people are summoned. And that was a big plus. We had to make sure we don't transgress FSB rules. So it's all done on a donation basis, on a you choose the amount. Now, the minute that happened, we also want put in one other factor. Don't give us a one-off donation. Give us a monthly donation because we can't pay salaries on one-off and we cannot pay rents and things like that. So that certainly changed ATA completely. We now have 17 people, about 8 consultants. We have a full, you know, officers connectivity, because we bring on board very good people, CAs, investigators, researchers, and what we're doing now is we've broadened our mandate to go beyond just the SANRAL, and there's a lot of factors in SANRAL, not just tolling that we are tackling, but SAA and Eskom. And I guess why these entities, they are state-owned entities, they are entities where the use of our tax needs to be very efficient, otherwise they have to get bailed out, as we see with SAA ongoingly. SANRAL's not making profits. Eskom's only projecting profits, now making profits, because they've gone and increased our tariffs by something like 700% in the last decade. So, I mean, that's unsustainable, and we have to challenge that as well. And it's not that we want these entities to fail. We want them to succeed, but we want their leadership to be held accountable, to be open, transparent, and honest. We see right now the construction cost of roads has gone up, and it's now almost 2 to 3 times that of anywhere else in the world. And we have to tackle this. They're building routes that they don't need to build, like they did years past, into Wild Coast. And these are jobs for mates. These are tolling contracts for 50 years, and we cannot have this. So that's our role. We're going to go and tackle those big issues. There's no shortage of issues. We cannot go up and be everything to everybody. So it's big matters. It's high net worth, challenging. But it's also, we can't do this without the people. So we need the public to get behind us. And it's easy on our website to just go and join us, give us $100 a month, and we will do what we can to make this country a better place.
So you've had to put a proper business model in place, annuity revenue to make it work somehow. Otherwise, as you say, that's honest. You almost died. You almost stopped existing
We didn't have the revenue to pay the salaries, and you know, a lot of people think yes, but you know, can't you just do this for nothing with volunteers? You cannot run organizations on people who come and go. You've got to have continuity. You've got to have the best people, and if you bring in good CAs and good legal people, and then they get better offers, they move on. And the organization dies. So we pay proper salaries, market-related salaries for good people to come in and do the work. But they are activist mindsetters, and that's important for us. They are here, they're fearless, they go out there and they do what they've got to do.
Excellent. Alice.
Hey, Wayne, how's it?
Hi, how are you?
It's a long way from Avis, Wayne.
It is, eh?
How much are you working to ensure that, you know, Auto can, you know, stay on and be sustainable even after you leave the scene, you know? Because so much of Auto's brand image is you right now.
Yes, and I'm working hard to change that. Up until a year ago, I was the spokesperson on everything. Well, you'll hear now that Ivan Hesselman, our legal director, and other project managers coming on board are now becoming the spokespeople on the various issues that we tackle. Mm-hmm. And you're quite right. You can't have a grand civil action movement built on an individual. So yes, we're bringing on potentially a new CEO. She will play a bigger role as well in the spokesperson role, so that I can pull back and chair at a little bit more of an arm's length and a distance, and just make sure that we keep building this organization for the long term, for the sustainability. That is not about an individual, it's about a brand with good people.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to ask you about what then could happen in terms of Wayne Duvernay. Does he, you know, go the political route? Are there any ambitions on that front?
Not at all. Politics would frustrate me. It just works too slow. It's this five-year process. What I like about civil activism, it's current democracy. It's dealing with current issues now. It's not waiting for elections to bring up and raise an issue. It's tackling things today, for today and for the future. So, politics is not in my sights. I'm an entrepreneur and a businessman by heart. And I look for opportunities. And while I think I will stay close to the outer matter, and as I say, chairing it is a little bit different to the day-to-day operational stuff where I'm still very involved in at the moment. I don't know what the future holds. Nobody knows. I like to move on. I like to grow. I like to take on new challenges and move forward.
So, how do you deal, though, with the perception that Arthur might, over time, be, you know, third leg of this three-legged stool called opposition?
Sorry, how do we deal with?
The perception that Arthur, you know, aspires to be in opposition.
Nah. Well, that's why we removed the word opposition to urban tolerance. Now we're an organization undoing tax abuse. So it's a pure civil action movement.
Okay.
It's a movement. It's an entity. It's like the Right to Know campaign. It's like Section 27. It has offices and it deals with issues. And, you know, as an issue is resolved, we move on to the next one. We take on 4, 5, 10 issues at a time, depending on our capacity. So we're not about to launch ourselves in the next elections into the political party, as much as people suggest we should or look at it. That's when we die, because this is not politics. This is effective intervention, civil intervention.
But it's not just politics, but it's just the opposition mentality, you know, that's always opposing. But instead of being actively involved and engaging in many other avenues like you are doing. So you weren't always called Organization Undoing Tax Abuse. That was a clever way to keep the name and to bring out your new purpose.
That's it. We kept the acronym. We had to. It was a good brand, and the new name had to define what we were about. And
nice. Clever thinking. Clever wordsmithing. Okay, do I pay my e-tolls, or am I raking up this big bill and I'm going to be whacked very hard? Where are we standing on e-tolls?
Well, right now our legal team have been meeting with Sanral's legal team. They're dragging their feet. I think they are in a bit of a predicament. They're in trouble. They have not conducted themselves properly. So the scheme, as you know, has less than 25% compliance on average over the last 2.5 years that it's been running. It has failed as a scheme. They're trying to summons people now. We're in court defending members. We thought we'd convince them to go with a test case. But if they don't, all the deputy judge presidents will probably agree that it has to happen. It kind of clog the courts up. And our view is that this case of ours is extremely strong, because the courts did leave the collateral challenge option open, and that's where we are right now. In other words, if government or Sanral wants to enforce, and they can't because the people have a right not to pay for something that was introduced unlawfully, well, in the scheme, that's the last death blow. At the moment, they've got 25% compliance purely because their corporates don't want to challenge them, and they'll keep paying.
So, we have heard the story, or the sound and the voice all for a few years now saying they're in trouble, but they just stay in trouble and they just stay there.
Yeah, it's like, you know, people keep saying that, but the toll's there, it hasn't gone. The only analogy I can bring to that is, yes, it's like saying the disco is on and the party's on, or the lights are there and the music's playing, but there's no one on the dance floor. So is it really, a party?
Sounds like one, but it's not, yeah.
Yes. So I mean, they generally are being propped up. They have to be, like any state-owned institution, their bonds are guaranteed. But the country, and this is where the ratings agencies are on it, Treasury, that, you know, you guarantee all this stuff, and if you can't collect, then the ratings agencies will come down heavily on them. So they are in trouble. They cannot collect the debt on the VTOLs. I don't think they ever will be able to. And they've got to go back to the drawing board.
You're fascinating. So we'll all watch this, of course. And then politics could change things to some degree if the DA becomes more powerful in Gauteng somehow or whatever. I guess that could play a role eventually as well.
Yeah. Look, there's no doubt this is a political decision. They can make the decision. They can turn it around. I mean, it's so sad that we would have really paid off this load had they gone the route that we suggested a number of years ago. It would have really been paid off. Instead, government is still fighting with its citizens and they haven't paid 1 cent of the road or of the bond. So they really have messed up, but they've got to acknowledge that or understand that before they can move forward. And I think they're battling to swallow that pill.
Wayne, just a quick question here. What happens if there is a sovereign downgrade? Because obviously Sunrun would even be downgraded even more to what it is and be junk as well. I mean, probably already is junk. What happens? Would they then possibly come down on people who don't pay, you know, like a ton of bricks in a desperate measure?
They can't come down. You see, laws are all about how do you introduce laws that are not governable? If you cannot govern a law, it's a useless law, and the government starts to suffer from a crisis of legitimacy. So right now they've got this law that says you must pay e-tolls, and the people say, yes, but I'm not paying it. And what are you going to do about it? And then they start sending these summonses out. Now there are 200,000 people that are not paying for e-tolls. So it's a lot more than that. It's close to 2 million.
Yes.
And they've sent out 6,000 summonses. Of which they're struggling to manage, and this will take years and years. So they can't do it. This is like half the last sort of kicks of a dying horse. They're really trying desperately. So the downgrade is not going to bring people rushing off to pay. In fact, it'll push them further away for paying for something that they shouldn't have been paying in the first place.
Okay, right. SAA, tell us what's going on there. I've missed a bit of that in the media.
Yeah, look at South African Airways. I don't know if you heard, last year we had the Airbus deal. We had this quartile capital organization or company rearing its head as a potential supplier of funds for the Airbus deal. And Airbus themselves have said, look, this is how you want to do it. We're not going to play this game. Treasury had to come in. There's all the politics around it. And it was scuppered. And we see the same thing happening now, where BNP Capital are a very unknown institution or organization with a few people that are suddenly providing services to SAA at a cost which is about 5 to 6 times more than what SAA would pay had they gone through their current channels. And then somehow they slipped in funding as one of the requirements from this organization, which was initially just a transaction advisor, and now it's a source of funding. And that's where there are other fees involved, and that's where they stand to earn millions of rands over time. It's questionable the way the board has gone about introducing BNP Capital. It's questionable the Treasury departments, the various departments inside SAA are very concerned about how this is happening. And we've found enough evidence there to suggest that the board is acting out of line with the fiduciary duties, out of line from a tax point of view, a legal point of view. And so we have said, either cancel this contract or we will interdict you and make sure it's cancelled. And that then starts to talk to, is the board in, at SAA playing the game properly? Are they, if they continue like this, could they be accused of dereliction of duty, of mismanagement, and therefore should they be directed? And that's where we're going now.
Yeah. Okay, well, you've got your plate full, and we wish you well. We wish civic society well. We like the fifth leg of our society, social media, where the ordinary citizen even make themselves known even more loudly, if I can put it that way, and it's exciting times. And yeah, let's stay in touch, and good luck with all these big projects that that step on people's toes.
Yeah, man, thank you very much. It's just, we can only do this with the people. Unfortunately, we've got sufficient people to take us to this next level, but we are still hamstrung with the amount of projects we can do until we get more. But we're building a litigation war chest, and we're building a strategy that, you know, hopefully does what it is, which is make the country a better place. Hold the politicians, hold the people in power to account. Otherwise, they will run roughshod over our tax money.
And people just go to OTAR website and they can join there.
It's very easy. At OTAR.co.za, it's become a member. Join here. You choose the amount. And don't ever think for 1 minute that, you know, what's my 100 Rand going to help? I mean, everybody coming together helps and makes this organization stronger.
Good luck. Wayne, thanks for joining us today.
Pleasure. All the best.
All the best. Bye-bye.
Cheers, Wayne.
All right, Wayne Duvenake from OTA, and they're doing some interesting work there. Next up, our youth leadership platform, our new baby. I love it. I think we're scratching the surface of where it's going. Stay with us.
Keeping it real on CliffCentral.com.